Castles in Spain, a serial in 5 parts by Edward Boyd, with Ray Brooks as Graham Mayer. Episode 1.
The last time I'd been there, the accountant's office had had a comforting air of permanence. It had Dickensian resonances, Victorian vibrations. Bob Cratchit, Scrooge, even Mr. Tulkinghorn from Bleak House. And once there'd been an old man behind a heavy oak desk who would have recognised these names, and who had great respect for books and everything and everyone who had to deal with them, including me, Graham Mayer, bookseller. But that was yesterday, or the day before, or the day before the day before. The old man had retired to comfortable Surrey, and his high-tech grandson had blitzed the office electronically. Box files had become computers, columns of figures mere fodder for calculators, and word processors with memory banks had replaced the old amnesiac typewriters. And yet, beneath all the glitz and technological gloss, there creaked an ancient bone.
I'm afraid, Mr. Mayer, your stepfather's decision is final.
Well, that would appear to be that.
Perhaps if you wrote to him personally.
I don't think I could do that, Mr. Rainsford.
Speaking as a businessman, I...
Please, don't. I suppose this development has been on the cards since my mother died.
Are you saying that your stepfather disliked you?
I think that would probably be doing him an injustice.
In what way?
I think it was summed up a long time ago in an old Scottish proverb. Many a man kisses the bairn for love of the nurse.
And if the nurse drops out of the equation, the kissing has to stop.
Which is exactly what has happened.
I know you find it distasteful, but I...
Go on.
May we talk business for a moment?
If you must.
Quite frankly, Mr. Mayer, I find your attitude incomprehensible.
In what way?
I don't think you realise what this means to you financially.
You underestimate me.
Well, I've fed all the relevant data into the computer.
And?
I'm afraid the prognosis is not good.
Let's hear it anyway.
I believe that without your stepfather's financial support, you'll be out of business within the next 6 months.
I left him to his office with its mechanical uncertainties and its doom-watch scenarios, and walked out into the blowsy urban London autumn. I made my way to a little church I know, not far from my doomed bookshop, and sat there unproductively for most of the afternoon. The place smelt of a kind of cool peace and beeswax, but not of miracles, which was what I really needed. So in the end, I went back to the bookshop, in case the miracle had gone to the wrong address, which it hadn't. She came into the shop. And had it not been closing time, I might easily have granted her the prize for the brightest thing the shop had seen that dank autumnal day. Not the most difficult award in the world to win on that day, and in that shop. Not many of her age group ever come into my bookshop, and when they do, it's usually for all the wrong reasons. Which may be my sour, middle-aged way of saying that all teenagers are, as the lady said of Lord Byron, mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Stare in silence long enough at anyone, and you will flood their minds with remembered sins. It has never worked with me because, and I say this with a certain regret, my sins have all been utterly banal, not worthy of remembrance. Sins of omission.
You, Mayor.
Mr. Mayor.
You worried about your sexuality or something?
My problem is much less complicated. I simply want to close the shop.
And you don't reckon me a member of the great book-buying public?
Frankly, I don't.
Should have worn my other jeans, the ones with the 6A-level patches.
I'm sure I'd find them fascinating, but some other time.
Hang about. Hang a bloody bout.
Another 5 minutes and I'm going home.
Don't bet on it.
I never bet.
Watch it. Your halo's showing.
And your 5 minutes is ticking away.
Harama.
Yes?
That ring any bells for you?
Somewhere in Spain, isn't it?
Let's not play silly bloody games.
All right. What does he want this time?
He wants to see you.
Why?
I've got wheels outside. Suppose I'll take you to see the man.
I shut up shop and followed her outside. The wheel she mentioned had a chassis and an engine, at a price tag that weighed in at around £15,000, and bodywork that had not seen water since the last brisk shower of rain. And somehow, don't ask me why, I found this reassuring.
Do you want to drive?
I don't.
I'll bet you don't drink or smoke either.
You're absolutely right.
I'd say that all adds up to a pretty negative sort of person.
Depends on how you define negative.
I define it in terms of things I hate.
All right, then. I hate cars, alcohol and tobacco. But most of all, I hate amateur psychiatrists. Now, let's just go wherever we're going.
Seated beside her in the car, I was suddenly more aware than I should have been of the autumn city. The lowering buildings, people, the deathbed extravagance of the trees in the parks, the urban generosity of the sky, all sear and yellow. Mirror image of myself, or perhaps more accurately, what I'd allowed myself to become.
Have you known him long?
You mean the man you're taking me to see?
Who else?
I hardly know him at all.
Yeah?
Never met him outside the shop.
Uh-huh.
You're making a mysterious mountain out of a mundane molehill.
I know my grandfather.
Which is more than I do.
He's a very devious person.
A traffic light halted us, and as we sat there patiently, its red light hung on the encroaching dark like a birthmark. Her hands on the wheel looked brown and capable. Her fingers wore no rings. Then the light changed, but the subject of conversation remained the same.
I wonder what he wants.
Mankind would have been immortal if Eve hadn't been so nosy.
So who wants to live forever?
Your grandfather's a very devious person, you said. What else is he?
He's a sick man.
Physically or mentally?
I'll leave you to make up your own mind about that.
That's an answer.
The best you'll get from me.
Ever get the feeling you've been here before?
What do you want about now?
This is the second time you've driven up this street.
Very observant. Now I know another thing about you.
Was that the object of the exercise?
Of course.
I don't quite understand why.
My grandfather has a great respect for my judgment of people.
Are you old enough to have any?
I'm old enough not to rise to that kind of bait.
That sounds as though you'd already made up your mind about me.
I have.
Am I allowed to hear the verdict?
No.
The darkness was moving in, and car headlights began to make their appearance like mechanical fireflies. The colour died out of 100 shop windows as lights were switched off, and people came surging out of office buildings. And then, in no time at all, it seemed, we were in a different London, a part where those people lived who had found the legendary streets that were paved with gold, and who had grabbed it all and kept it.
Is this where you live?
You don't approve?
It's hardly what I expected.
What did you expect?
A social conscience could get very lonely around here.
A social conscience is probably lonely anywhere.
I wouldn't know about that.
My grandfather thinks you would.
She walked quickly away. So quickly I had to hurry to catch up with her. And we climbed the expensive steps towards the expensive door, whose surface had never been solid by a tradesman's knuckles. And it opened quietly with a kind of wooden obedience. And if it had bowed, a polite, obsequious bow, you would not have been surprised. He stood just inside the door, an immaculate old man who wore his age like a well-cut suit. He had hair like white silk and disturbing blue eyes that stopped being disturbing once you realized that he was blind. When he spoke, you recognized the accent they only sell in Oxford or maybe Cambridge.
It was very good of you to come along, Mr. Mayor.
Not at all.
I hope you didn't find Teresa too uncouth.
She's very, forthright.
She is totally devoid of good manners. A rude little bitch.
Look, I'm sure you wouldn't wish to embarrass me, Mr.
Coleman. Jocelyn Coleman. She didn't even have the common courtesy to introduce us.
Let me make this quite clear, Mr. Coleman. I didn't come here to discuss the social graces or lack of them of someone I hardly know.
Then why are you here?
My grandfather asked him to come.
Really, Teresa? Did you have to disappear and leave Mr. Mayor like
that? I disappeared, as you put it, for two reasons. Grandfather asked me to let him know at once when Mr. Mayor arrived.
I don't think we need to go into the second reason.
Why not? The second reason...
The second reason, Mr. Mayor, is that for some strange reason, Teresa can't bear to be in the same room as me.
Grandfather will see you now, Mr. Mayor.
I followed her out of the hallway and into what seemed almost like a picture gallery. There were paintings everywhere, and I registered in my interested amateur way one that might have been a Christopher Wood, a couple that declared themselves unmistakably the work of that Cornish curmudgeon Alfred Wallace. And I reflected that while money might not grow on trees, it could flourish quite happily on gallery walls.
Sorry about that back there.
Ever read Tolstoy?
No.
He says that all happy families are alike, but an unhappy family is unhappy after its own fashion.
They should have that up in lights in Piccadilly.
Does Coleman know why I'm here?
No.
That makes two of us.
He thinks you're a private detective.
Who in God's name told him that?
I did.
It was my day for surprises, and it still had some way to go. Teresa tapped on a door at the end of the gallery. A voice bade us enter, which we did, and were transported back half a century. The room might have been a set for a war play, but a play about a specific war in a specific place at a specific time. A long, plain table spilled with maps and posters flared from the walls. One of them stated defiantly, "Defensa Madrid des Defensa Catalunya." He was sprawled in a deep leather armchair. He looked up at me and smiled. Even sprawling, he still contrived to look military. By my reckoning, he must have been over 70, but he seemed a great deal younger. Perhaps the room with its maps and posters of a bygone war had become a magic time capsule that kept time in abeyance.
You look flustered, Mayor.
I have an identity crisis.
What's your problem?
When I walked into this house, I was simple Graham Mayer, the bookseller. Now it seems I'm Philip Marlowe, private eye.
Do you know what this is all about, Teresa?
I told Jocelyn that Mr. Mayer was a private detective.
Ah, you'll be the death of me, Teresa. You must excuse us, Mayor. A private joke.
Now, if you'll excuse me, you have things to discuss.
Nothing that need drive you away, though.
Do you mind an audience, Mr. Mayer?
Well, not really.
That means you do. So I'll leave the pair of you to it.
She had a quality of swiftness, as though with her, thought and action meshed together in perfect congruence. And after she'd gone, Forrest unfolded himself from his chair and walked across the room to look at one of the gaudy posters on the wall.
You bring back a lot of memories, Mayor.
Pleasant ones, I hope.
Sun and olive trees.
Suffering and death.
That too, of course. You know, you do look remarkably like your grandfather.
So I've been told.
I helped bury him, you know.
Yes.
Yes, all that was a long time ago, in another country.
Besides, the wench is dead.
What wench are you talking about?
My grandmother.
I'm not sure I understand what you mean.
My grandfather died at Harama, right?
I saw it happen.
Another one of the birds of the air, aren't you?
I'm not with you.
My childhood was sprinkled with their memories. All the strange men who kept turning up at the house from time to time. Some were tall, some were short, some were fat. Not many of them. Some were skinny. They came from all over the country. Manchester, Plymouth, Nottingham, Glasgow, Dundee, Edinburgh.
Given time, I could name every one of them.
I dare say you could.
All ex-members of the International Brigade.
Every last one of them.
Am I wrong in feeling you resented them?
I have the impression that the whole family did.
Why was that, do you think?
I think they all began to feel eventually that they were living in some kind of bloody shrine. I remember my grandmother saying that her home had become a cenotaph. And she was right, the house was a cenotaph, with one bloody name on it.
I notice you don't mention your parents much.
They split up.
Hooray for them.
Wherever they are.
So you were really brought up by your grandmother.
Women who marry heroes get used to bringing up kids on their own.
Ah, you have the gift of empathy.
Oh.
Did I say something wrong?
Well, you could be suggesting in a roundabout way that I have no personality of my own.
That remains to be seen.
Am I being tested for something, Mr. Forrest?
Perhaps.
Then why don't you come right out with it?
Tell me, Mayor, what would you be doing if you weren't here?
Nothing very much, I suppose.
No wife? No girlfriend?
No.
No film you must see? Nothing on television you can't afford to miss?
Nothing.
No date in the pub with the boys?
Nothing like that.
Just sitting at home remembering an old lady.
That's rather gratuitous, Mr. Forrest.
I expected you to say that.
My grandmother...
A very strong, forceful character, I should imagine.
She had to be.
If there were hundreds, maybe even thousands like her in the hungry 1930s.
I only knew her.
And that's maybe why you're in danger of identifying with her too closely.
What about your granddaughter? Does she identify with you?
You'll have to ask her that yourself.
At the risk of appearing rude, Mr. Forrest...
You must let me do this my own way, Mayor.
Very well.
I have a letter I want you to read. I'd like you to look first at the signature.
Ernest Hemingway.
Read it.
I cannot admit to ever having been a great Hemingway fan. For me, whatever he was saying was always drowned out by the sound of muscles being flexed. In this respect, I tended to agree with Max Eastman, whose review of a Hemingway work said, "Come out from behind the hair on your chest, Ernest, and let's see who you are." In the letter, Hemingway wrote about meeting a chunky little Scot. The little man had his right arm in an aeroplane splint, and his left arm hung useless at his side. Yet he strutted along as though he owned whatever earth he trod. There was about him an air of cheerful danger.
Salut, camarada.
Salut.
Looks like you've been busy, soldier.
You could say that.
Can I ask where?
You some kind of reporter?
I guess you might call me that.
You're looking for a story, whatever your name is.
Hemingway.
Well, how's this for a story, Hemingway? See this splint in my arm?
It looks kind of homemade, I'd say.
Right, well, maybe that's because it is homemade. You'll never guess where it came from.
Comrade, I'm not even going to try.
Well, I'll tell you then. 4 or 5 days ago, we'd a wee bit set to in your sector, and I wound up with a wean of bullets in my arm, some fancy bayonet damage in the other. When the dust settled, the medical officer said my arm needed a splint.
Yeah?
Trouble with splints was just another thing we didn't have.
You seem to have solved that problem.
A big Willie McKelvey solved it. You need a splint, Jock? He says, I'll get you a splint. And off he went. 20 minutes later, he comes back with a big dod of wood and he's whittling away at it with his bayonet. There's your splint, Jock, says he.
Where'd he get it from?
Know what a sanctuary was?
It's a kind of wayside shrine, isn't it?
That's right. With a bit of crossing, that big wooden job.
Which your friend thought could be put to a better use.
I did that. Looked a big chunk of it.
You probably got the only splint in Spain that's been blessed by an archbishop.
Hey, Big Willie'd like that. He's a lapsed Catholic.
I have a feeling Jesus might like it too.
Well, it'll be nice talking to you. Better go up to the hospital, have my wounds dressed. Maybe see you around.
A soldier.
Aye?
If I bump into the Pope and he's looking for a piece of wood, who do I say has it?
Cameron. Joke Cameron.
Forrest was staring at me across the room and across half a century. And for a moment his face gleamed with a kind of lost innocence. and the familiar quotation when he uttered it had a sudden new poignancy that I'd not previously recognized.
Bliss was it in that dawn to be alive, but to be young was very heaven.
That always sounds to me like an epitaph.
At least we had one. Will your generation be able to say the same?
Probably not.
I want you to find Jock Cameron.
Are you serious?
Deadly serious.
There are professionals who specialize in that kind of thing.
And what makes you think I haven't tried them? Anyway, aren't you too a professional, Mayor?
With books, yes. I can search out rare books, find out-of-print titles, things like that. Finding people is something quite different.
I don't think so. Let me tell you something about professionals, Mayor.
I'm listening.
Professionals live by accepting limitations. Either their own personal limitations or the limitations of the situation they face.
I'm prepared to accept that.
A good professional will operate to the fullest possible extent, but not beyond that.
Are we talking about money now?
Money, time, effort, you name it.
Where do I appear in all this?
Do you remember a book called Bread and Olives?
I remember it well.
You went to extraordinary trouble to track it down for me, didn't you?
I can get pretty obsessive about books.
But not about people. It's time you started having opinions of your own, Mayor.
I find that rather patronizing.
Such was not my intention, I assure you.
Am I supposed to read your mind, sir?
There is nothing to be gained by falling out with me, Mayor.
Then perhaps you should explain why you think I have no opinions of my own.
I was thinking of your grandmother.
Why do you keep coming back to her?
Because I think it's time you got her out of your system.
I remember sitting at her bedside towards the end of her life, listening as she put her life into words, a music without bar lines. She talked as though the past, the present, and what was left of the future had all merged into one vast unity, seamless. The junctions where they met invisible, and to her, irrelevant. Sometimes she would get cross with me for not remembering immediately something that had happened long before I was born.
You haven't heard a word I said, have you?
Sorry.
I was talking about the different ways that bereavement affects individuals.
Yes.
Have you ever given the subject much thought?
Not really.
You're probably aware that the bereft sometimes suffer from feelings of guilt.
That which I should have done, I did not do.
Exactly.
Where is this taking us?
Back to your childhood, perhaps.
I'd rather go somewhere I haven't already been.
I'm afraid that's not on.
We were talking about bereavement.
We still are.
Can we leave my childhood out of it?
Is remembering it so painful?
No. Just irrelevant.
Well, Mayor, I've told you what I want. Find Jock Cameron. Is it yes or no?
I'd like a little more time to consider it.
You have till tomorrow morning.
I'll call you. Tomorrow lunchtime.
Very well.
He slipped back into his Spanish War time capsule, and I left him there and walked through the gallery, with its expensive pictures, their prices multiplying silently and smugly on the walls. Then out of the gallery and into the hallway, where the blind man stood as though he'd not moved since I'd last seen him.
Is that you, Mayor?
Yes, Mr. Coleman.
Have you come to any arrangement?
Well, not exactly.
May I ask why not?
Perhaps I have reservations about the whole thing.
I am delighted to hear you say that.
Why?
Jock Cameron was a man of violence, and wherever he was, death was not far away. I think, Mayor, that it would be better for everyone concerned if Cameron were never found.
I came out of the quiet, prosperous house into the quiet, prosperous street and walked quickly away, not feeling prosperous, not feeling quiet, but in some undefined way disturbed, and yes, resentful. Two old men and a teenage girl had, in their various ways, called into question everything I had not realized I was. Not being very well up in car recognition or the subtleties of ABC registrations and stuff like that, I took no notice of the car that pulled in just ahead of me until I saw the driver.
You walk very fast.
I always do when I'm afraid.
What are you afraid of?
It might be against the law to be seen actually walking in this neighbourhood.
Jump in before the lynching party arrives. How'd you get on with Grandfather?
You were right when you said he was devious.
So what else is new?
Yes.
Did you agree to do what he asked?
I told him I would tell him my answer, yes or no, tomorrow.
You'll say yes, of course.
Why, of course?
Because I recommended you as the right man for the job.
In episode 1 of Castles in Spain by Edward Boyd, Graham Mayer was played by Ray Brooks, with Alexandra Mathy as Teresa, Gerard Green as Sandy Forrest, John Westbrook as Jocelyn Coleman, Jonathan Taffler as Rainsford, William Hope as Ernest Hemingway, and John Hannah as Jock Cameron. The director was Patrick Rayner.